I would like to read with you in the book of Numbers, chapter 13. Numbers, chapter 13. And we'll break into the narrative at verse 26. Numbers 13 and verse 26. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron, and to all the congregation of the children of Israel, unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them, and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great, and moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome. But the men that went up with him said, We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of a great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. Now just look down into the next chapter for a few verses. Verse 6, And Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes, and they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, The land which we passed through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with them. Fear them not. I guess it's always good at the beginning of any message to tell people what you're trying to say. And then you're supposed to try to say it, and then at the end you're supposed to tell them what you just said. So let me start right now by talking about the topic of making sure that we do not lose sight of God. Making sure that we do not lose sight of God. In what way did the report of the ten differ from the report of the two? Because they both talked, or at least Caleb and Joshua felt that, I'm sure, about the land being good, and that it was exactly what God said. It was a land of milk and honey, and that it was very valuable land. The difference was that the ten only saw the land and the obstacles, and the two saw the land and the obstacles and God. So that is how their report differed. And the spies, losing sight of God, saying, We're not able. We be not able. And the two, factoring all that they saw through a lens that included the mighty God of Israel, said, We be well able. By the way, that bad report actually carries the idea of slander, of defamation of character. And we need to see who it was that was being slandered against, who it was who was being defamed. But notice, please, that the ten saw gigantic obstacles in the way of obeying God. But the two saw God and felt that they were able. Notice, please, the intimidating obstacles. Giants, walls, difficulties. Think of the obstacles now that they faced. The people were strong and imposing. They were giants. The cities were large and fortified. They were well defended. The land, and therefore the task of taking it, had this problem. They saw ites all over the place. Amalekites, Moabites, all over the place were these people. And the land was already settled, making it very difficult. They weren't coming into virgin territory, just cut down trees and build a house. They were coming into a land already inhabited by enemies to them and enemies of God. Now just take that to where we are right now and think of the obstacles that we face, you and the preachers face, when it comes to the spread of the gospel. First of all, the people. The people that we preach to today know very, very little of the Bible. They have a drastically lessened attention span. And they are geared to the visual, not the vocal or the oral. They're geared to seeing things, sitting back, and sometimes maybe turning off the ignition of their brain and just watching things play before their eyes. And what we are doing is presenting truth to their mind. That's an obstacle. Then too, the cities were fortified and built up in Canaan. Think about the fact that the people that we preach to are programmed to doubt anything from the past. That's almost hard for us to grasp. The year 2000 dawned, it wasn't long before the phrase was coined that something was so 20th century, so 20th, as if it were ancient and from some long forgotten age. People are programmed to doubt not only anything from the past, but they're predisposed to neglect the eternal and the spiritual. And that's an obstacle that you face as you're preaching the gospel. And the land that they went to in Canaan was settled by other people. And the people that you invite, the people that you meet, the people that we get to preach to, have preconceived notions about what they believe. In many cases, their minds are all settled. Some of them have a religion of their own that they practice regularly, and we are not always preaching to open minds and noble Bereans who want to weigh up what they are hearing. So there are formidable obstacles in your way in gospel work. Forget about God, and you'll fold your hands and have him say, and you'll think, what's the point of trying to reach the lost? They saw, if I could borrow the terms from the author Swift, they saw Brobdingnagian obstacles, and they felt they had Lilliputian ability. That led to a very enfeebling attitude expressed in the words, we be not evil. They were depressed, they wept, and they cried. They were discontented with how God had worked. He's brought us up to die in the wilderness. They were disobedient, they were ready to turn back. In fact, when you go into chapter 14, it is a death warrant that could have been a birth certificate. The nation could have entered, the people could have entered into the land, and it would have been theirs, and the nation would have been established, and instead, they were going to die in the desert because of their disobedience to God. They said, the land's good. But, you ever find yourself using that? God is still the same. Just as powerful as when he saved 3,000 souls on the day of Pentecost. But, we're living in the last days. Now the gospel is still the power of God and the salvation, but people really aren't interested today. Sometimes people even think it's a lot of work. You pitch a tent. You go to all the trouble of having meetings, inviting speakers. And you think, how small often are the results. Would you think it's small if it was your husband or wife who became saved? Would you think the results small and insignificant if it was your son or daughter who was saved? God wants to teach us, including the present speaker, that every soul, is of infinite value to God. And so, here was this enfeebling attitude, we just can't do it. We're not able. Bring into that then, finally, the enabling Lord, because the language of Caleb and Joshua was, we be well able. They should have thought of the past, how wonderfully God had worked for them. Smash it! The greatest, most powerful, most affluent society of its day, so that the wise men would say to Pharaoh, don't you know that Egypt has been destroyed? He brought that nation to its knees. Brought his people through a carved path in the Red Sea. They didn't walk through a reedy area with the water just lapping over their toes. The waters were congealed on either side. God froze, if you will, a wall of water on either side as they went past it. If they just thought of the past, they would think, well, if God did that, he can do this. Think of your past. Here, in Bistam, has God not graciously worked in meetings here in the past? Are there not people who were part of the testimony who were reached through your efforts in the gospel? So remember what God has done in the past. They should have thought about the power, how mightily God worked, destroying that army in the Red Sea, defending every foe who came against them, providing for them, showing and displaying his power in the wilderness. Think of how mightily God has worked here in Vista. Think of people who have walked in the meeting knowing hardly anything about the gospel, and God has come in power and saved them. Think of people who were atheists. Think of people who were whose intellect was darkened by their sins, and they heard the gospel in this room or in a tent that you pitched, and now they're on the way to heaven. Just think of how God has worked mightily. And think of how God has worked faithfully, because he gave the nation of Israel a threefold promise. He said he would bring them out, and he did that. He said he would bring them through, and he had done that. And then he said he would bring them in. They had watched God bring them out. They had watched God provide for them for the 2 years that they were in the wilderness. They watched God bring them through. Their shoes didn't wax old. God protected them, shadowed them, guarded them, kept them. God was now going to fulfill the third part of his promise and bring them in. And only two of the 12 spies realized God was faithful and he would keep his word. Please don't lose sight of God. See, if you look for outside help, you'll be disappointed. Asa sent to the king of Syria to come. He was getting outside help to fight against Baasha, the king of Israel. He felt that for some reason he lost sight of God, that God could give a smaller army that was Judah's, give them victory over the larger Israeli army. And God reminded Asa of the mistake of looking somewhere else other than to God. There is some question about Psalm 121, whether it is a question or a statement, but if we take it as a question, the psalmist asks, shall I look to the hills? Where's my help coming from? My help comes from the Lord, maker of heaven and earth. Don't look at the preachers. And please, you must understand, I have nothing but the highest respect for Mr. Hay, but don't look at us. We can't bring blessing. God's not going to bless the meeting because we're speaking. Don't look at yourselves. Don't look for any inner strength or power. That's the 10 spies looked at themselves and thought, we can't do this. The obstacles are too great. Who were they slandering or defaming? Verse 9, Caleb says, don't rebel against the Lord. They're calling into question God's ability to fulfill his word. So I want to just beg you, in the week of meetings that's remaining, that you will keep your eye on the Lord. That you will remember how mightily, how faithfully, how graciously he has worked in the past. And with your eye on him, pray that in the kindness of God, he will be willing to show us his mighty hand once more in the salvation of souls.